Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my podcast. Today is Monday, April 22nd, 2024. It was last Monday at this time that Iran struck back, that Israel struck back. I want to get those words straight, that Israel struck back. They retaliated against that 300 drone and missile attack on Shabbat about 2 weeks ago. And so what we all have been anticipating happened. And what I want to do this morning on the program, I want to focus in on Israel's retaliation against Iran and the prophetic implications that that attack has. Let me explain to you what I want to talk about. This attack was in the city of Esfahan near some nuclear sites, which if you follow The Cross in the Desert, you know what I've talked about many times in the past before about Iran's nuclear program and the weakness and the frivolity of the Biden administration appeasing the mullahs through sanction relief money, through the Obama administration, what they did in 2015 with this nuclear deal and how Trump came along and ripped it up, rightly so, when he took office in 2017. He actually did it in 2018, to be more specific. But my point is, this administration is an appeaser. It wants to work with the mullahs of Iran. Instead of addressing the severe human rights violations against the people of Iran, they are more interested in working out this somehow this deal with Iran for their nuclear program. Now, they will always say, well, no, we have no future anticipation of doing that, et cetera. But in the back of Biden's mind is the legacy. Obama did this deal simply for his legacy. So he could say, look at what I've done solving the biggest problem in the Middle East. Well, actually, you're creating the biggest problem in the Middle East. And so what I'm trying to say in all of the ramblings this morning is that the attack by Israel, the retaliation, has prophetic significance. And I want to explain in detail what I mean by that. But what I want to do first is I want to take us to a CBN special report about Iran striking back. Let's listen.
Well, welcome to the 700 Club. Israel has responded to Iran's attack with a strike of its own, hitting an airbase deep in Iranian territory. The assault showed Israel's ability to attack Iran whenever it wants.
Some believe the strike was designed to respond to Iran's aggression without sparking a wider regional war. Chris Mitchell reports from Jerusalem.
The Iranian Tasnim news agency reported the assault took place in the southeastern part of the city near its nuclear energy mountain. Isfahan is the site of one of Iran's major nuclear sites, enriching uranium for Iran's nuclear program. According to the Jerusalem Post, the attack in Isfahan was carried out with long-range missiles launched from aircraft, not drones or land-air missiles. An Iranian official told Reuters, there is no plan for an immediate response. It is not clear who is behind the attack. An Iranian TV anchor downplayed the attack and quoted a military official in Isfahan.
He did confirm that there were some loud sounds that were heard in the east of the city of Isfahan, and this was related to the air defense system, as we told you and our viewers before, triggered by the presence of three small drones that were present in that area.
On local television, other reporters near the area showed how quiet and normal Isfahan looks. Middle East expert Avi Melamed told CBN News Iran seems to be minimizing the story on purpose. Yona Bob, Jerusalem Post military correspondent and author of the book Target Tehran, told CBN News the strike sends a clear message.
The message behind the strike from Israel was, Iran, you cannot do what you did last weekend. You attacked Israel directly. You attacked with 350 aerial threats, 170 drones, 120 ballistic missiles, 30 cruise missiles. That cannot happen again. If it does, you will suffer, and you will suffer large.
Bob also says the attack was calibrated to avoid a regional war and represents a crossroads to Israel and Iran.
This is a unique moment. There was a shadow war between Israel and Iran that we talk about in our book, Target Tehran, for a long time. The question now is, will we go back to that shadow war, or has the paradigm been crushed? And even though Israel isn't officially taking credit for what happened today, will there be additional direct exchanges between Iran and Israel? We will only know that going forward.
The attack in Isfahan took place on the 85th birthday of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Meanwhile, some analysts are saying that Israel's response was measured, only enough to give an answer to the Iranian attack. That's because it's preparing to enter the last Hamas stronghold in the city of Rafah in Gaza to complete the goal of finishing off Hamas and its leadership and getting the hostages back. IDF troops are still operating in the central Gaza Strip, eliminating terrorists and striking military compounds, observation posts and rocket launchers and launching points. They've also destroyed 17 tunnel shafts.
And another major development involving Israel, as the U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution Thursday, giving the Palestinians full membership at the United Nations, a step toward a Palestinian state. But the Biden administration says a Palestinian state should only be brought about by direct talks with Israel. Regardless of the developments at the U.N. and Gaza, the world's focus is on the tensions between Israel and Iran and what comes next. Chris Mitchell, CBS.
That is a report from Chris Mitchell of CBN outlining what happened last Monday shortly after the attack by Iran during Shabbat, when the miracle happened, as one a scientist and physicist pointed out, and I talked about this on Thursday, the miracle of stopping 99% of that attack. It was truly God intervening and protecting his people. Now, this retaliation has some prophetic significance, because I want to go into detail about a particular verse of scripture I've talked about numerous times in this program, but you may not be familiar with it. It's from Jeremiah 49. It's the prophecy about Elam and the future of Iran. Now, last time on Thursday, I talked about Ezekiel 38, how a coalition of nations will come together after the rapture, headed by Russia, joined by Iran, or Persia, as it says in Ezekiel 38, which is modern-day Iran, and they will go and seek to destroy Israel, but God will thwart plan. That's Ezekiel 38. This latest attack on the nuclear sites or around the nuclear sites in Isfahan in Iran has prophetic significance for a specific prophecy in Jeremiah chapter 49. And the prophet Jeremiah is predicting that in the future, a portion of Iran would one day undergo a massive disaster, that this epic event would be caused by the Lord, occurring in the latter days, as it says here in Jeremiah 49, and precipitate at that time the worldwide dispersion of many Iranian exiles. Specifically in this prophecy, as we're going to talk about, he states that there would be no nations that these exiles will not go. Where will this occur? Elam, that's an ancient name. We'll talk about it. Here's the prophecy, Jeremiah 49, verses 34 through 39. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet against Elam in the beginning of the region of Zedekiah, king of Judah, saying, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might, and upon Elam will I bring the four winds from the four quarters of heaven, and will scatter them toward all those winds, and there shall be no nation whither the outcasts of Elam shall not come. For I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies, and before them that seek their life, and I will bring evil upon them, even my fierce anger, says the Lord, and I will send the sword after them till I have consumed them. And I will set my throne in Elam, and will destroy from thence the king and the princes, saith the Lord. But it shall come to pass in the latter days that I will bring again the captivity of Elam, saith the Lord. Or in some translations, restore their fortunes, saith the Lord. Well, where is Elam? During the time of Jeremiah and Ezekiel, Elam comprised what is today considered the central western portion of Iran. Elam basically hugged much of the northeastern coastline of the Persian Gulf. Persia, spoken by Ezekiel, encompassed most of today's northern Iran at that time. Elam, if you look in the Bible, was the son of Shem, Noah's oldest son. His descendants settled in what is today western Iran, east of the Tigris River. The Elamites were a warlike people, and according to Genesis chapter 14, verses 1 through 9, and Isaiah 22:6, it tells us the Elamites were experts in archery, hence the term, he will break the bow of the Elamites. Well, wait a minute, Randy. Wasn't this prophecy already fulfilled in ancient times? Well, let's look at this background of this prophecy. The prophecy regarding Elam is to have been issued by Jeremiah in 597 BC, 1 year prior to Nebuchadnezzar's conquest of Elam in 596 BC. Now, although subjugated by the Babylonian king, as a whole, the Elamite culture and language remained intact, and they were not dispersed worldwide, as this prophecy said they would be. Cyrus the Great conquered Babylon in 539 BC, commencing the Persian Empire until 330 BC. So the Persian Empire extended through most of the Middle East and encompassed Elam. The Elamites, according to Ezra 4:9, still had political representation during that time. And Ezra chapter 2, verse 7, verse 31 states that the Elamites returned to their homeland after the Babylonian captivity. Now, Acts 2:9 is very interesting. The New Testament references Elamites at Jerusalem at the time of Pentecost. Jeremiah chapter 29 and Isaiah 11 give evidence of Elam's existence in the last days. There is no historic record of people from this specific region or ethnic group being dispersed worldwide at any time. So the historical tracking here and the scriptural evidence suggests that these Elamite prophecies remained unfulfilled to this day. Many of the events cited above that I've been reading to you indicates Elam aroused the fierce anger of the Lord. And where have we heard that in the news? It is an event that is yet future. Now, let's summarize this prophecy. The most important declaration, and this ties into Israel's response to Iran. Remember, their striking of the nuclear sites. The most important declaration in this prophecy is that Elam has done something, that is modern-day Iran, has done something that has provoked the fierce anger of the Lord. As a result, God in this prophecy has Jeremiah saying or declaring 8 times, I will bring about a judgment against Elam. Number one, break the bow of Elam. That is the foremost of their military might. Bring the four winds from four quarters of heaven. I will. Scatter them toward all those winds. That is the Elamites. I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies and before those who seek their life. I will bring disaster upon them, my fierce anger. I will send the sword after them until I have consumed them. I will set my throne in Elam, God says. I will destroy from there the kings and the princes, and in the latter days I will bring back the captives of Elam. There will be a regathering, a restoration. It appears in this prophecy that Elam, that is the political leadership of Iran, we want to make that distinction. We're not talking about the suffering people of Iran. We're talking about the political leadership. It appears that the political leadership, that is Elam or Persia or Iran, does something that angers the Lord greatly so that they become dismayed, suffering a disaster, and that a sword falls upon them. And that suggests to me and to many scholars, like Bill Salas, who wrote the book Nuclear Showdown in Iran, he is looking at this prophecy as a prophecy expert. He suggests that this judgment is militarily related. This provocation, he says, may involve Israel. Well, we see what is the big issue today in the Middle East. The instability is brought about by Iran's quest for a nuclear weapon, their quest for regional power that includes acquisition of nuclear weapons, equipping an array of surrogates with missiles. They're working with Hezbollah, Hamas, all of these terrorist organizations, enemies that might seek to end America, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and a number of other Sunni Muslim states. That's very important because Iran is Shiite Muslim, and Shiites and Sunnis obviously don't get along. Now, let's look at the context again, the potential consequences fast forward to today. We notice from this prophecy and the background that the Elamites were expert archers. It's interesting to see how Jeremiah picks up on this theme in this prophecy. The Hebrew word for bow is queseth. Without a functional bow, an archer is unable to launch arrows at his target. Well, let's look at that in today's context. Today, Iran's greatest military strength is its large arsenal of ballistic and cruise missiles that have been borrowed from the technology thanks to Russia, China, North Korea. And of course, you know they're enriching the uranium above the prescribed level. They violated that. They're enriching uranium beyond what they're allowed to get a nuclear weapon. You know that in the news. Now, many of these strategic missile sites are in the southwestern part of Iran, facing the Persian Gulf, in what was Elam, and that may be the target of this prophetic judgment. Where did the strike occur? Near the city of Esfahan, near the nuclear sites. That's where Israel retaliated. One of their chief nuclear sites is the Bushehr nuclear reactor. That's right inside the boundaries of ancient Elam. And it is loaded with Russian-made nuclear fuel rods. It is a nuclear disaster waiting to happen. This project in the Bushehr plant began in 75. It was under the Shah's government, but it came to a big halt in 1979 during the Islamic Revolution. German manufacturers withdrew from the project. The Iranians were unable to complete it, so they contacted the Russians, and the reactor became operational again in May of 11. The new Bushehr nuclear plant sits atop three tectonic plates, making it vulnerable to seismic activity. There was a 6.3 earthquake in the province of Bushehr back in April of 2013 that killed 37 and injured 850 people. And this quake that happened prompted Russian scientists to go visit the facility to inspect the nuclear rods. The question here is, is this prophecy I read to you a military action against Iran by another country, of course Israel, or is it some natural disaster involving the nuclear site? And will we be present to see this event as the church? I don't know. But we should be aware that this is a prophecy. It will happen one day according to God's word. Fierce anger against Elam. It's separate from Ezekiel 38 and the Gog and Magog invasion. But I want us to recognize also another very important point in this prophecy, that God said he will set his throne in Elam and restore the fortunes of his people. Well, the fastest underground church in the world is in Tehran. It's in Iran. God's kingdom in many ways is there. And God promises one day to set his throne there. The implications are that he has a special plan for the people of Iran in the future, democracy and freedom. I see this all the time. And the Holy Spirit is already doing an incredible work in that nation. It's the awakening of the Iranian people in a house church movement, often led by women. And it is thriving. It is growing. So as you think about this prophecy, and I encourage you to read it on your own, Jeremiah chapter 49, verses 34 through 39, read it carefully. Consider what I've taught on this, and I've taught on this many times before. But I think with what happened with the strike against the nuclear sites by Israel just a week ago is a foreshadow of what God is saying will happen in the future to the government, the political, and the nuclear structure of Iran, that he will bring evil upon them. My fierce anger, I will send a sword after them. I will consume them. He is angry because they have touched the apple of his eye, the chosen people of Israel. And I believe what we saw in this recent attack in Isfahan is just a foreshadow of what I believe will be ultimately happening in the future. Jeremiah chapter 49. Some food for thought. Now, I want to read to you a great article from my good friend, Marzia Amorizeda. She is a wonderful, wonderful lady, and she has such a background. She's an Iranian-American who immigrated to the U.S. after being sentenced to death in Iran for the crime of converting to Christianity. She endured months of mental and physical hardships and intense interrogations. She wrote about that whole subject in the book Captive in Iran. She's the author of her latest book, A Love Journey with God. She's a public speaker, an activist for religious freedom. She has widely recognized as a great authority on Iran, and she is a beautiful Christian. And she wrote a recent article dealing with this situation, this war between Iran and Israel. And I want to take the time to read this to you because it's so point, so right on. And it has everything to do with what I've been sharing with you this morning. This is what Marzia writes. Her article is called The Five-Stone Strategy of Defeating the Islamic Regime in Iran. Marzia writes, visiting Israel for the first time a year ago was not only a spiritual pilgrimage and fulfillment of a dream, but an experience that allowed me to look at my own experiences as a persecuted Christian in Iran, arrested and sentenced to death because of my faith through a different prism. I went to Israel to impart a message to the Israeli and Jewish people that Iran is not your enemies. The Iran people support Israel and the Jewish people, and that the Iranian and Israeli people have a common enemy in the terrorist Islamic regime. So she's saying the government of Iran is our real enemy. The people of Iran love the Jewish people. On my first day in Israel, I visited the Ella Valley, the biblical site where David fought and defeated the giant Philistine Goliath. It was a life-changing experience. I learned that the people referred to today as Palestinians are not descendants of the Philistines, and I appreciated King David even more, not just as a psalmist, but as a smart warrior as well. I understood clearly that today Israel represents David, and those in the great Arab and Muslim world who threaten Israel are the modern-day Goliath. I learned that David's successful military strategy then, even as the underdog, can and ought to be employed by Israel today to defeat its enemies, including the terrorist Islamic regime of the country of my birth. Following the Islamic regime firing hundreds of ballistic and cruise missiles and suicide drones at Israel this past week, the savage Hamas massacre of Israelis on October 7th, and what's being reported as an Israeli attack on Iranian sites, I see the urgency in Israel and the world responding to achieve a complete victory to defeat the Ayatollahs and their proxies, just as David defeated Goliath. King David's battle against Goliath is recounted in 1 Samuel 16. David was a brave, handsome shepherd. Among his brothers, he was the unlikely warrior who spoke well, and the Lord was with him fighting for Israel. God anointed him for a specific time to defeat Goliath. However, David was a shepherd and an ordinary man. He wasn't a military expert. Just as Israel is mocked and challenged today, even David's brothers mocked him. David had strong faith and knew that God would deliver Goliath in his hands. His faith and trust were not in the sword or spear, but in the power of the God of Israel who promised to fight for his people. While not an experienced warrior, David's faith was key to his practical military tactic. He saw how the Lord who rescued him from the paw of the lion and the bear would rescue him from the hand of Goliath. He knew that God had prepared him. David entered the battle rather than wearing a coat of armor and helmet, because he knew that the God of Israel was his true armor. David entered the battle armed with five stones, and he knew exactly where to aim. He struck Goliath in the head. He did not waste his stones aiming at his hands, legs, or other parts of Goliath's body. He knew he should only target the head. With David's first stone, Goliath fell down. The example is the same today. Israel is much smaller than its enemies, which threaten it. However, just like David, it has the intelligence and ability to be focused on taking down the evil giants that threaten it today, the head of which is the Islamic regime. Adopting David's five-stone strategy, Israel should be no less laser-focused on how to defeat its modern enemies. Israel and the West should target stone number one, the supreme leader and Ayatollahs. Stone number two, Iran's nuclear facilities and scientists. Stone number three, IRGC leaders its military installations and putting its business subsidiaries on global terrorist lists. Stone number four, harsh economic sanctions on the failing Iranian economy. And stone number five, the grave of Ayatollah Khomeini, to remove all of the symbols of the evil Islamic regime from its beginning. Now, think back to the 1939 Wizard of Oz. After defeating the Wicked Witch of the West, Dorothy and her friends were fearful that they would be detained or killed by the witch's soldiers, the Winky Guards. When the Wicked Witch was killed and the Winky Guards were freed from her tyranny, they cheered, "Hail to Dorothy! The Wicked Witch is dead!" By defeating the Islamic regime this way, the Iranian people will also rise up, cheer those who have helped to remove the wicked rulers and take control of their country, free from the extremist Islam that has enslaved them for decades. Doing so will also reveal the power of good over evil. Just like David over Goliath, the unsuspecting military hero who came from this small beginnings and now is celebrated as a brave warrior. The witch realizes this, crying out as she's dying that she never thought a little girl like me would be able to melt me and end my wicked deeds. The Wicked Witch serves as another metaphor for today's Islamic regime that most do not know about. In my book, A Love Journey with God, Marzieh says, I recount personal experiences of how the regime integrates modern witchcraft to create fear among the masses. It's hard to imagine in the West in 2024 that these things are true and not just a fantasy from a movie generations ago, but in Iran today, witchcraft is alive and well. Let this be a call to the world to see that the good represented by Israel is greater than the evil represented in the Islamic regime and its proxies. Through this, Israel not only represents good, but is also protected by God. I wish at this season, when the Jewish people celebrate their deliverance from slavery in Egypt, that even with all the challenges facing Israel and Jewish people around the world and the potential of an attack by the Islamic regime and its proxies, they should know that God still stands with them. He is protecting them, and they will be victorious. And I wish that as God delivered the Jewish people from slavery in Egypt, showing his might and faithfulness to his people to the pagan world, Iran will be delivered, and the Iranian people will come to know the one true God. This is Marzieh Amirzadeh from her latest article, The Five-Stone Strategy of Defeating the Islamic Regime in Iran, a beautifully well-thought-out written article. I'm sure you would agree with me. As I'm thinking through the things I've shared with you this morning and going over the graphic description of things to happen in the future and the current evil, the hostage crisis with the people of Israel, the back and forth fighting, the uncertainty of what will happen, the evil that seems to permeate in the world, I am reminded that all of us need to remember the promise of God in everything, that he truly is in control. And there is coming a day for us as believers when he will make everything right and holy and perfect again. That once Garden of Eden will become a paradise on earth for us as Christians. And I want to minister to us this morning, for those of us that may be just feeling battle-weary, over information overload, just looking at the circumstances of life, just looking at the evil, and it seems like the terrorism in our world every day, the hatred, I want to remind us of God's promise to us. In Revelation chapter 21, verses 3 through 5, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Look, God's place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. I want to focus in on that last part. I am making everything new. No matter what you're going through in your life, the master potter, the master weaver of all events and circumstances. We call him the master potter and weaver because he brings beauty out of the ashes of our suffering. He takes the wrong in our lives. He takes the adversity in our lives. He weaves and molds and shapes us through adversity so we become more like Jesus, conformed more to that image. It's a painful process, and it's not easy, but God promises to make everything new again. Not just wiping the tears from our eyes, not just taking away the pain and the suffering, not just saying there's no more death, but he is making everything new. And this is a perfect promise to my friends in Iran who are Christians. Through all of the suffering, the uncertainty, and the oppression, God says, I will make everything new. And I want you just to sit back for a couple of minutes and hear this song from a beautiful Christian artist named Thomas Griffin, talking about the promise to make everything new. Let's listen.
Let me pick up the pieces of your shattered heart. I'll put them back together and reflect who you really are. You are my masterpiece. I've loved you from the start. And I can renew everything. I knew you before you were, and I make all things anew. I will restore you. I make all things anew. I will restore you. Let me pick up the pieces of your shattered. Put them back together and reflect who you really are. You are my masterpiece. I've loved you from the start. I can renew everything. I knew you before you were. I make all. Don't be afraid, never hide. I've come to give you life. Oh, I wipe the tears from your eyes. Heal the pain that's deep inside. Don't be afraid, never hide. I've come to give you life. I will restore you. I make all things anew. I will restore you. Oh, yes. I've got you. I've got you. I will restore you.
Such a beautiful song, such a beautiful ministry, such a beautiful voice. Thomas Griffin, the depth of the words to that song is very profound, but yet very beautiful. And like God says in his word, these words are trustworthy and true. I make all things new. This morning he has promised to take the broken pieces of your life and bring beauty out of the ashes of your suffering. He has promised to restore you. This is what God says in Jeremiah 49. I will restore the fortunes of Elam in all of their suffering and all of their oppression. And if I could speak face to face with my Iranian friends right now, I would tell them that God has a future for the people of Iran that have suffered greatly under the sword of the Ayatollahs. In fact, the seeds of that victory and of that prophecy are taking shape even as we speak with the great church movement in Iran, the underground church. God will set his throne in Elam, he says. You can see evidence of that already happening now. But the whole theme of everything this morning from the prophecies and everything I've been sharing comes down to this statement in Revelation chapter 21. I make all things new. It's not just in the future, which is the ultimate, but it's God saying to you right now, I will take the broken pieces of your life, and as the master potter, I promise to make everything right, to make everything new for you again. I promise to restore you. So I want you to take this word to heart today and meditate on it and believe it and act on it. It is God's promise to you. He is the one who restores. He is the one who rejuvenates. He is the one that makes everything new again. Believe it. It's his promise. It's his word. I don't know what you're struggling with today. I don't know what uncertainty, any fear or depression you might have. But when you go to the word of God and you make his promises your priority, you're going to see a difference in your life. You're going to not only feel it, you're going to see it, because God has promised, I will take the brokenness and make beauty out of it again, from broken to beautiful. That is his promise. God bless you. Have a great week, and I will see you again on Thursday on the cross in the desert. Have a great, great week.